You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty and Tom this afternoon going till 2. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiokan Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups, with catering also available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports at 509-334-5423.
The Woodland County Humane Society is in need of volunteers. Located in Pullman, the shelter is dedicated to caring for stray, abandoned, and abused animals.
Opportunities include walking, feeding, and grooming the animals. For more information, call the shelter at 509-332-3422 or visit the website at www.whitmanpets.org. The dogs and cats will thank you with their unconditional love. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WCU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Hey, Tom, do you know what they're going to be doing to the Ad Annex here in the next year?
No, Scotty, what?
They're tearing it down. You know why?
Why is that?
Because they want to put up a lawn.
Put up a lawn?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah, so they're going to tear down a building, one of the oldest ones on campus, in order to put up a lawn. That should make you happy, being green and everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds nice. So can't play Frisbee in the Ad Annex, but, you know. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club and nonprofit organizations want us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, room 126B, or fill out the form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more info, call our office at 335-2208.
Good work. Alrighty, this is the PES KZU 90.7 FM. You can reach us on the telephone at 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on our show's website, www.thepes.com. In the meantime, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. The favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Tom, I missed you so much last week.
I missed you too, Scotty. And the week before. I mean, it's been a while since we had a show.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting, I guess, to catch people up with a couple things. First off, I'd like to remind you about that, our conversation that we were having the last time you were here, if you can remember that far back.
Yeah.
Before you went off on your 2-week spring break, lounging on the beaches of Florida, or was it Cancun? I can't remember where you went. But anyway.
It was Richland. That's pretty close.
Yeah. So anyway, it's interesting. I like it nice and dark in here, but the minute Tom walked in the door, the first thing he did is he turned on the lights.
That's not true. You told me to turn on the lights.
No. Yeah. I believe you turned on the lights when you walked in this room. Did you not?
Did you turn on the lights? After you told me to.
Did you turn on the lights? The question is, did you turn on the lights?
Yes.
Thank you.
But you
see,
told me
Tom
to turn on the
doesn't
lights.
Like the lights. As a matter of fact, to prove a point, he brought in two 150-watt halogen bulbs that are just blaring in here right now. The room is already
is
added
a bold-faced
lie.
I did no such thing.
I wish you guys could be here right now to see how bright and hot this room is getting because of the two 150-watt halogen bulbs Tom has burning in this room right now, let alone all the
ridiculous
lights that he's turned on. I don't know what it is about him and the lights in this room, but I think I'm not going to say anything about it again, because next time he might bring in like 600-watt halogens that usually are used to light up gyms or something like that.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those just knocking around my, you know, my trunk.
I can't believe you, you know. And then here's the other thing.
Okay.
You know, I spent some time scouring the internet to prove to Tom that I am not a conspiracy theorist, that I'm not insane, and what's the word that you always call me? Oh, come on. You call it to me all the time. You should know what it is.
Nice.
Wow. He just said that so I wouldn't turn off his microphone again. He calls me paranoid. There it is. Actually, my nickname now for him is just the Noid, because
yeah,
paranoid is too many syllables.
That's
anymore.
Another lie. But
so
yeah,
he calls, whenever he sees me, he's like, hey, the Noid, what's up? I'm like, dude, what? And he goes, no, you're just being paranoid about everything, but that's
ridiculous.
Cool. I'm cool with you.
I don't even know what to say to this, all these allegations today. Well, you know, I think I called some of your ideas paranoid, Scotty, but maybe not you as a person, you know, maybe...
If the idea comes from me, therefore it is part of me, you call the idea paranoid, you call me the noid. Thank you. Okay, so, I once again, Tom, I missed you last week.
Yeah. How'd it go?
It went really well. I had the other Tom, he called in, talked some of the local political issues. The Pullman High School is looking at either getting rebuilt or remodeled, and they're asking for pretty much about a $52 to $55 million levy coming up. And so that's sort of, it's one of those things where we were talking about, well, with Hawkins and Walmart alone, the amount of money that they'd be paying towards the Pullman School District alone, just the Pullman School District, would be in the tune of, a couple $100,000 a year to the Pullman School District that we're not getting because of all these delays. I mean, Walmart, I think, was going to add like $50,000, I think, a year in. You know, Walmart should have been in about 3 or 4 years ago. So, you know, you got $150,000 that the Pullman School District, you know, is missing out on a year, more or less, $50,000 a year. Anyway, so we talked about that. We talked about a couple other things. And then I spent the last hour talking about buying a car and playing the game. And that's what I called it. I called it the game.
Just like that, in that tone of voice?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yes, because it was the game. The thing was, is that I don't know if you've ever purchased a car or were you given one at your 16th birthday?
Yeah, right. But no, I've never bought a car.
Okay. So you weren't given one on your 16th birthday?
No.
How do you have a vehicle now? Did you steal it?
GTA? Yeah.
GTA, nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you played the game, and it made you go do it in real life in downtown Seattle or San Diego or somewhere?
You know, I think one of the things I've found in playing violent video games is it's made me more violent as a person. You know, I don't know. Is that, how do you feel about that, Scotty? Is that true for you as well?
I actually play Tecmo Bowl, Baseball Stars, and Blades of Steel. They're regular Nintendo games. We're talking
Nintendo.
About like 1980s, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, I play Tetris on there too. That usually doesn't make me very angry, except when they won't give me that one four straight one when you need it, and like all of
kind
a sudden,
upsetting.
After you don't get it, they send you like seven in a row, and it's like, thanks.
Yeah.
But
that doesn't make you violent, though. I mean,
no, it just makes me. It just makes me
makes
frustrated.
You're angry. No, you're about to say angry.
No, sir.
Yeah.
No, sir. I don't get angry. Anger is not a emotion in my vocabulary.
Right.
So anyway,
okay.
I talked about the game and about how car dealers play the game and how you have to work the system in order to get a price on a car that is agreeable. Because they're not going to just give it to you out the door. They're going to do everything they can to charge you as much as possible to get a bigger commission, which, of course, that's the name of the game, right? You want to get it cheap, and they want to get it as expensive as possible, and you somehow have to come to the middle somewhere where you're both reasonably acceptable
about
it.
I'm familiar with that concept.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway... I talked about but there's unwritten rules of the game that you don't know unless you've played the game a whole bunch of times, or you know people, and I know people, so I learned how to play the game, and I've played the game a whole bunch of times. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, the whole second hour is pretty much dedicated to the game, and I actually had more to go into, but I actually ran out of time.
Wow.
And then. On Wednesday of last week, we had our Palooza-tix Sunday, or our monthly Palooza-tix lunch was last Wednesday. And we were going to, every second Wednesday of the month, we're going to have a Palooza-tix lunch, which is pretty much people who read or whatever with Palooza-tix that want to just go up. We hit the Hilltop Restaurant and have a nice lunch and conversation and just, you know, sort of kick back and have a good time. And
that's pretty cool.
We did one on a non-second Wednesday of the month this time because we were having a sort of a goodbye lunch for a couple of our Palooza-tix readers who are leaving the area. So did that on Wednesday, and that was a lot of fun. And now, here we are Monday. It's, wow, we're getting to the crunch time of the semester. We got intramural softball starting up next week for me on Wednesday, Sunday.
That
so
sounds
I'm,
stressful.
Well, the stressful part is getting four teams ready to roll all at the same time because I have my two summer teams, my two intramural teams. One's co-ed and one's men's on each side. And with intramurals, it's not as bad because you go there, you sign up your team, you pay the money, everybody signs up at the field, no big deal. You just got to make sure you got everybody there. With the city league, you actually have to come up with hundreds of dollars. And you have to get everybody to sign before you turn it in. It costs almost $800 for a men's team to play city summer softball out here. Yeah. And a co-ed team is $475.
Wow.
So typically, depending on who your sponsor is, some sponsors will give you t-shirts and hats, and then the team has to split the rest of the money. Some sponsors will pay a portion of the fee plus hats and t-shirts, and then the team pays the rest of it. And some sponsors go the whole way and pay for everything, and the players play for free. I have different sponsors for different teams that I put out there, and one of my sponsors offers up t-shirts, so everybody has a team jersey. But then we split the cost of the team. The other sponsor I have offers half the cost of the team plus jerseys and hats, and then the team has to pick up the other half. So usually you're talking $35 a player one way or the other.
Yeah.
So it's a little spendy to play, you know, and the problem is that trying to collect the money out of everybody before I have to pay it out of pocket so that I don't, you know, I'm not down a grand waiting for everybody to pay me back. So, yeah, it's a little bit time-consuming when you consider I tend to have more than seven jobs to do on the side. I got all these jobs to work when I'm not playing softball. So, anyway, I'm not the noid that Tom thinks I am. And here we go. Okay. There's an article in the newspaper, and it was, "Careful, the banks are watching." And it's by Greg Saints from the New House Web Service. And I'll just read you a couple portions of it from here and there, and we'll get Tom's point of view here, because I'm sure he'll still call me the noid after this. But anyway, they said,
I have never called you the noid in my entire life.
I think you just did right now. Again.
No, I didn't.
For like the 18,000th time. I've lost count.
I'm not sure where this like myth began, but I just want to lay it to rest now.
Okay.
For our listeners, I have never, ever called Scotty the Noid. I think he likes that, actually. And if you could see him now, he's laughing pretty heartily.
I can't believe you lie to the listeners. It's bad enough you call me the Noid, you turn on the lights, you bring in these really bright lights. Now you lie to the listeners.
Concocting this elaborate fantasy involving lights and calling him the Noid. I don't understand.
So anyway, they know, Tom, about your morning coffee that you bought with your debit card. They know about the money you transferred from an online savings account to your local checking account.
Of course they do. I mean,
and if by chance you wired cash to a shell company for a prostitution ring, they'll definitely know about that. Every day, banks and other financial institutions monitor hundreds of millions of transactions looking for unusual patterns that could be signs of anything from money laundering to terrorism financing to identity theft. The scrutiny was intensified after September 11, 2001, and extends to every customer. Federal laws such as the Bank Secrecy Act and the Patriot Act require these banks to report suspicious activities as well as all transactions involving more than $10,000. There's some software that generates profiles of customers of banks, brokerage firms, and other financial institutions and analyzes their transactions to see how they may differ from previous activities or from transfers of other customers with similar profiles. The key principle is to never look at one transaction on its own. Always look at it in relation to the customer profile or the big picture. While most people are familiar with the $10,000 threshold reporting law, few are aware banks are also look at much smaller transaction. Newsday reported last week that Spitzer, the mayor of the former mayor of New York, divided a transfer of more than $10,000 into three smaller ones into a shell operated by the shell company operated by the prostitution ring. The practice is called structuring and is aimed at not tripping the mandatory reporting requirement when more than $10,000 is involved. Spitzer's bank noted the activity and reported it. Hudson City Bank said if employees suspect structuring or if someone asks for $11,000 in cash, they file what is known as a suspicious activity report or a SAR. Banks and other financial institutions have been required to do this since 1996. reporting requirements increased when the Patriot Act was passed in September 11th, after September 11th. In 2006, more than 1 million SARs were filed. And compare that to 2001 when 205,000. So it's gone up four times. This is, so essentially, when I talked about the idea that your whole life is pretty much being watched via your movements, your debit card and your credit cards and your swiping to get into buildings or whatever else, yeah. Everything's being tracked. It's, I mean, right there, sure. It's all being watched. Every transaction you make, it doesn't matter what it is, what it's for, it's being watched.
Yeah, actually, like,
this is nothing
recently.
About the Noid. This is about real life, and you need to realize this stuff. You need to stop calling me paranoid.
Well, I think the whole paranoid comment was about people tracking the movement on my WSU ID card.
You don't think that happens?
No, I don't.
Wow.
I don't think. But, you know, this... I guess I already knew about this. I mean, I know it, that the banks watch
transactions. Wait a minute. You know about this?
Yeah.
Are you part of this?
Not really sure.
Well, are you one I need to be worried about?
Clearly, I mean, while you're worrying about other things, you know, being paranoid. No, but like I bought some airplane tickets a couple months ago, and I got a call from my bank pretty much the next day saying, "Hey, you know, someone just bought two airplane tickets using your card. Was that you?" I said, you know, "Yeah, it was." So, but yeah, I'm, you know, I guess, you know, I guess it could be bothersome if you're trying to, you know, wire funds to a prostitution ring or something like that, but.
Or just live an anonymous life? A life that somebody's not tracking at every minute?
I understand why you...
Shouldn't you be able to, like, buy stuff without people knowing? I mean, seriously. You know, I wish I had... The check goes where? To the bank. And then the bank knows you that you wrote a check to wherever. The only way to truly make it anonymous would be to pay cash. And that works real well when you have cash in hand, but you can't do that over the internet. You can't do that with a lot of people.
That's always been the case, though, right?
What's that?
If you want to make an anonymous transaction, you need to use cash.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, so that's not really, this is nothing new.
But what is interesting is the fact that you could have theoretically argued, well, everything's handled by computers. There's nobody overseeing anything that you're doing. But this is, I mean, it's definite proof that somebody is actually physically, well, not maybe physically, but there's programs that are building a model of Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And the program says, well, this is what Tom would normally do. Oh, this was out of the ordinary. Let's start looking closer at Tom and what's going on here.
No, I understand how it works. But
is that not a little bit spooky?
I would understand why.
Is that not
spooky? It makes you feel uncomfortable. I mean, I guess, you know.
I mean, I'm sure you don't. I'm sure you don't have anything to hide, as most people don't have anything to hide.
Yeah.
But does that mean that it's right that somebody invades the privacy that you're not worried about having invaded? Just because you left your door unlocked doesn't mean it gives somebody else the right to go into it, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, seriously, if for instance you get your house robbed and the police go, "Well, was your front door unlocked?" and you go, "Well, yeah, I think I left it." Well, you deserved it. I mean, that would make no sense at all.
I understand why this makes you uncomfortable.
So then, and speaking of front doors unlocked, did you hear about what happened to somebody from Oregon, Jacksonville, Oregon, I believe it was, on Craigslist? Somebody posted an ad saying, "I'm forced to leave the area. I have to get rid of everything now. Just come over and help yourself." And this guy comes home, and there are people loading up his stuff. He said there's some 30 people pillaging around his property, loading up all his stuff and driving off, and he's trying to stop them. And they're like, nope, it's mine. See, here's this from Craigslist that said, you know. And so anyway, the guy calls the police, and several people gave stuff back, but they're looking at charges on a lot of people who kept the stuff without giving it back. And they're also trying to figure out...
Was it a joke, or like what?
Well, they're trying to figure out who posted this, because obviously... In this situation, that's a criminal act, and that person's probably going to get in a little bit of trouble. So anyway, I just thought about that because the whole unlocked door thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not the first time that's happened via Craigslist. There's another incident where somebody said, "Yeah, come over and take whatever you want out of this house." And, I mean, seriously, everything was taken. And going back to this guy just the other day, the article mentioned, he goes, he can't even sit on his front porch and think... He can't even sit on his front porch and think about this because they took his porch swing, too. Something like that.
Oh.
Yeah. So, okay. Now, going on to another article, This was in the newspaper. It says, "Watch out, you're being watched." It was it's by Danny Westneat, W-E-S-T-N-E-A-T, Danny Westneat, from the Seattle Times column, staff columnist. And what he was talking about is specifically there's a meeting with people from the San Juan Islands and the Border Patrol, because the federal government is actually doing citizenship checks on people doing domestic ferry runs. So in other words, somebody who's taken a ferry from a Washington to Washington Point having citizenship checks done.
Huh.
And they're like, why? And
that is weird.
Yeah. But what was interesting is this guy who was in this meeting, his name was Joe Giuliano, I believe. G-I-U-L-I-A-N-O, Giuliano. He's a chief deputy for the Border Patrol. He's sort of like the number two guy in the Blaine area. And he told the story to the people who were there, and he said the feds had been monitoring Interstate 5 for nuclear dirty bombs, and they do it with radiation detectors. So, believe it or not, you might not know this. I don't know if you've ever driven I-5 up towards Whatcom County into one Canada. Time. Have you been to Canada before?
Oh, yeah, a couple times.
You've been to Canada?
Yeah, I think three times.
Really? Why did you go to Canada?
Vacation.
You vacation in Canada?
Yeah.
What's there to do? Drink?
No, I wasn't old enough, I don't think. I don't really remember. It was kind of a long time ago.
Uh-huh. That sounds suspicious to me, Tom. I should go through all your transactions and figure out what it was that you really were doing up there in Canada.
Well, I was like 7, so.
Okay. Okay, so your parents were vacationing and you were just being brought along. Okay. So anyway, this is actually a story, something that happened. There was a vehicle going down I-5 at about 70 miles an hour. There's an agent in the median about 80 feet from the traffic that was coming by. And all of a sudden, the signal went off identifying an isotope in one of the passing cars. So this car that had passed by was pulled over. The driver was questioned. And then they did a search of the car. And it's interesting if you think about it. The guy didn't do anything. There was just a sensor going off saying, hey, there's radiation in the car. And that was enough probable cause to search the car, it sounds like. I don't know. Obviously, this is just a brief story. It doesn't go into all the details. You can only get out of it what the story tells you. So they might have kept it there until they got a search warrant and, you know, did the whole nine yards. But it says the driver was questioned and then did a cursory search of the car. So up to this time, the guy has actually not committed a crime, hasn't done anything wrong, but now he's getting his property searched. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's the same thing that happens when you walk through a metal detector, isn't it?
If you walk through a metal detector...
And it goes off and...
And it goes off.
And they search you.
Actually, most of the time, I believe you're asked to take your stuff out voluntarily.
Right.
And put it through their little X-ray machine or whatever. And then you walk through the metal detector.
Unless they wand you or...
They do what to you?
You know, wand.
What? Where do you go?
Wands.
Where do they put it?
Yeah, yeah.
They wand you?
Wand you, yeah. You know,
I've never heard of that, Tom.
Are you serious?
Where do you go? I mean,
airports?
Seriously. Wow.
Literally every airport in the country.
They wand you?
Pretty much, yeah.
So they don't have X-ray or metal detectors anymore?
No, like if you fail a metal detecting test, and you go back through and
how do you fail a metal detecting test? Seriously, it's like take the stuff out of your pockets, you pass. You fail the test? That's awesome. I bet you start failing them on purpose just so you can get wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm giving you crud, Tom.
I know.
Okay, so excuse me. So the government now has the ability to detect. Okay, let me go back. My story got lost here. Okay, so the driver's question in the car search. Here's the kicker. It turned out that there was a cat with cancer in the car, and it had just gone under radiation treatment 3 days earlier. So the writer, Danny Westneat, jeez, I can't even read, Westneat, he sort of sums it up. He goes, the government now has the ability to detect radiation in a cat in a car going 70 miles an hour. And then the...
It's pretty impressive, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But think about that kind of technology that's being used to monitor all of us. So then the Border Patrol agent, you know, he goes... You know, he even admitted, he goes, we're watching lots. He said, from internet data crunching to citizen checkpoints, bob sniffing to bank monitoring.
Yeah.
And this article actually goes on to talk about the fact that, you know, it was the bank monitoring that brought down Spitzer. So it's interesting that, you know, phone and internet data crunching, citizenship checkpoints, bomb sniffing. You know, at what point is enough? You know, what point is enough? What point is too much? And we're allowing this to happen.
Like, I think demanding it in a lot of cases.
You know, you say that, and it's probably very true.
It
and
is.
That
I mean,
it makes me sad.
It's just like, you know, the outcry after 9/11. You know, why wasn't more done? You know, in a lot of cases, we're demanding this kind of protection.
It's not protection, though.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Monitoring.
Okay, there we go. People are giving up their anonymity and their freedom of association of with whomever they want, no matter how dirty they are. I mean, because seriously, it's like when you're in your house, you do things that you probably don't do in public, right?
Yeah.
And it's because you're in the privacy of your own house. You feel that you are truly private in your house. When you go out in public, you never know who's there, who's watching. You don't want to, you know, do something that's sort of embarrassing or, you know, whatever. So you're always a little bit more courteous and careful with what you do in public places. But you're getting to the point now where very little of what you do is truly private anymore. You know, we're becoming people that at all times we have to be on guard with what we say, what we do, who we are, who we're with. I mean, it's just, it doesn't seem like this is a good direction that to be heading. So anyway, from Tom to the Noid, what do you think?
About?
This.
That article?
Well, just in general, this whole stuff. Do you think that we're going the right direction?
Well, I mean, I guess not, no.
Okay. So anyway,
I don't even know what else to say. Yeah.
Okay, well, so you're not in favor of all this intrusion into privacy then?
It's. I mean, I understand why it's being done, and it seems like a very fine line that you have to walk, especially since, like I said, a lot of it's being demanded by the public.
Maybe you could help me understand why it's being done, because I don't understand why it's being done.
You were around after 9/11, right?
I was.
And the, you know, constant outcry and inquiries into how come we didn't know about it, how come we didn't stop it, how come we didn't prevent it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so.
That was a statement. So why, you said you understand why it's happening.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, these are steps that the government's taking to try to prevent this kind of behavior.
Okay, so we're doing it to prevent people with box cutters from taking over an airplane. That's why we're doing it?
That's not the only focus. If you wanted to do that, we'd just like ban the sale of box cutters or I don't know.
Shh, not so loud. They'll probably go, gosh, you know, we should ban the sale of box cutters. Tom said it first. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, though, where you sort of wonder why. Well, I sort of wonder why they have, you know, it seems too reactionary. You remember that whole liquid thing, right?
Yeah.
Where they then all of a sudden they started banning all liquids on planes, and it's like, it's not like that was all of a sudden not possible yesterday and possible today.
Right.
But it's almost like, you know, I have to think that somebody within the powers that be that, you know, govern what can and can't go on airplanes, had to have had an inkling that this kind of technology was out there to be able to, you know, have a bomb with the liquids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So for them to not worry about it until then it became public, and then all of a sudden in order to show that we're doing something, we ban all liquids, it's almost like we're being reactionary to problems and not really solving anything. It's a dog and pony show, really. And that's the whole point, is that they do a big dog and pony show before you get on an airplane to make everybody feel better. Remember the shoe bomber? All of a sudden, you got to take off your shoes on every flight.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, why was this again? Oh, well, because one guy one time had a bomb in his shoe, and therefore we got to test everybody for bombs in his shoes. Oh, you mean you never thought that I could have a bomb in my shoe the day before the guy had the bomb in his shoe? Well, no, we never thought about that. That was the first time anybody ever thought that there could be a bomb in a shoe. I mean, seriously, it's so reactionary to everything. You know, I think I said that B word so many times that right now the government satellites are focusing in and on the KZUU studios. And if I were you, I would probably be hiding right about now. Put a tinfoil cup over your head or like a, make a little hat out of tinfoil to protect them from stealing your brainwaves.
Right.
Tom,
yeah.
I totally missed you last week. I'm trying to fit 2 hours worth of stuff in 35 minutes. It's just not... It's just not enough time. So anyway, let's get back to Tom. We're done with the Noid, right?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So how was your spring break?
It was pretty good. The first week I was in the Tri-Cities, which
I went to Richland.
Yeah, which I understand why you mistook that for Cancun, because it's so similar. And I think a lot of people actually had that problem.
Well, I can tell you were in the Tri-Cities. You're so glowing today.
Yeah. You know what? It's just a great place to live. God, gotta love it.
Okay, so you're in the Tri-Cities.
For the first week,
spring break in the Tri-Cities was just hanging out with the old friends and stuff like that? And
absolutely, yeah. It was good times.
Sleep in, not have to worry about classes, no homework.
That kind of thing.
What year are you in school again?
Junior.
So you probably don't do this, but do you still bring your schoolwork home with you on breaks? Saying, I'm going to get around to it, and you... Take the backpack, have her never been unpacked back home with you?
Right. I've done that before for sure, but...
Yeah. But you're a junior now. You've learned. You're like, screw it. It's a waste of time. It never happens anyway, right?
Well, since I missed last week of school...
Oh, really? Oh, this... Okay.
Yeah, this last week I wasn't here at all, so I had a bunch of midterms and...
Oh, so you really actually did have to have your stuff.
I actually did homework over break. It was kind of... Crazy. Kind of weird. Yeah, right.
That's weird. That's what I mean. Weird. They call it break for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not homework. It's break.
Right.
Yeah. So did you, what kind of things do you do in the Tri-Cities for fun?
Oh, well, there's so many options. You know, the Tri-Cities is just really a mecca of culture and learning and, you know, just a city of light. You know, and there's all kinds of galleries.
So that's what your fascination is with all the lights in this room right now? See, now I know. Now I understand where Tom's coming from.
Right. Oh, there's so many, street performers and all kinds of music, concert venues.
You know what we call street performers back in the Seattle area? They're called bums. Homeless, if you will.
Okay, well, we don't have those. But, it's just... No, I'm joking. There's not very much to do, but...
There's not. Okay, I thought you were being dead serious.
No, I was completely joking.
Which, now, you guys have a great radio station down there, at least.
Which one's that?
Well, 90.7 FM, KZUU, streaming live on the web, www.kzuu.org. Duh.
Oh. Right, yeah.
What radio station did you think I would say? Come on.
You're just a wild card, Scary. I had literally no idea what you were going to say.
Going to go off the left field now.
Yeah.
So,
spring
break was good. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and then I hung out in Richmond for spring break, and then last week I actually went to New York for a week.
Interviews for jobs or anything or?
No, it was just going to a conference.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So it was pretty much the same thing I would do at school. Just like sit and lecture for 8 hours and take notes, and then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Go back home and sleep.
To the where?
To the hotel.
You said hotel. That's awesome.
Why is that awesome?
So you were at a conference for a full week?
Yeah.
Did you get any time to be touristy over there?
I did. I had like a few mornings off and stuff, so it was kind of cool.
Did you go to the Empire State Building?
I saw the Empire State
Building.
Eiffel
Tower?
I didn't go to the top of it. Eiffel Tower would be... Paris.
Yeah, that'd be a little bit far. No, I was thinking of the thing the French made, the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Did you see it at least?
Yeah, saw that from... We didn't go out to the island, but...
You saw it from the plane?
From Manhattan.
You went to Manhattan. Did you go to Wall Street?
Yeah. Wall Street.
Did you actually go into the building?
No, I don't think you can't. I don't think.
You don't think you can?
I'm not sure. I don't.
You didn't try.
I didn't try.
Yeah.
So. Went to Ground Zero, and let's see, Metropolitan Museum of Art.
What
Central
was Ground
Park.
Zero like?
It was mostly just a big hole in the ground. There wasn't like a big, you know, there wasn't a museum or a shrine or even, there wasn't really anything there. It looked like any other construction site you might see.
Really?
Yeah. They posted up on the chain link fence in a couple places. There was like plans for the memorial that they're building on the side of the towers. But other than that, there wasn't really much to see there, other than a big hole in the ground.
Really?
Yeah, huh. I was disappointed, or not disappointed. I was just surprised.
I guess
that'd be the right word. And
you would have thought there would have been something a little.
Yeah,
bit more.
Like some kind of, you know, memorial or something.
It's been 6 years, almost
yeah.
seven, almost well, six and a half years.
Yeah, I think they used to have a lot more things, but
yeah. I would wonder though why? I mean, why have they not started another building? Are they fun? I mean,
oh, they've started to build the memorial that's going to go in the place of the towers. Mm-hmm. It's like a park type area. I don't know. I don't.
Weren't they
really
going to be rebuilding a building there though? I thought.
You know what? Like a lot of people were telling me that, and even people that live in New York. But when I went to the site, it was pretty clear that they were building this park. So I don't. But I've heard from a lot of people that they're going to build like this Freedom Tower.
Yeah, it's going to be the tallest tower ever.
Yeah, or something like that. And but at the site, it looked like they're just building a park.
Huh, so. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So was that your first trip to New York?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing special.
Not really. No,
did you take a cab?
I did take a cab one time.
Yeah. What was that like? Did you get the cash cab?
It's fine.
No.
The what?
Nothing. It's a TV game show
called
The Cash Cab.
It's fine. There's other cities in America that I think are more fun. Or,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Like Richland?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, exactly. Like the Tri-Cities. Absolutely.
Well, probably because you got a lot of friends there.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Seattle is just a lot nicer. And
oh, yeah?
I like Portland and San Francisco.
Well, I could... Wow.
Have you been to the East Coast before, Scotty?
Negative. I was on the other side of the Mississippi River once.
Yeah, it's not
twice now.
Almost there, but it's pretty different. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that from other jobs that I have where it's just the mentality of the way the job is done is so different between East Coast and West Coast, and the
right.
even the terminology is different. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, people are just, you know, compared to here or
and then they have that
or even
accent.
To Seattle, people are just a lot, I don't know, more abrupt and kind of
over there. They're a lot more abrupt.
Yeah.
Do
like,
they
I don't like it, driving around the Tri-Cities. You will never ever hear someone honk their horn. Like maybe if like someone's shooting your best friend, maybe you might be like, you know, might honk a little bit and be like, hey, you know, knock it off. But yeah, like, wave, you know. But
that was my best friend, but have a good day.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to impose, but it does look like you're involved in something I don't fully approve of. But in New York, I mean, or like anywhere on the East Coast, it's just people leaning on their horns, and I don't know.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah, I've never been to those parts, so I really don't know. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. D.C. is the same way. Other cities on the East Coast are pretty similar.
Huh.
It's just like here, like a service worker gets like a pretty, you know, they can, the cost of living is low enough that they can, you know, they can have an apartment and, you know. Make a reasonable life for themselves, like
uh-huh.
just, even if you're just like a grocer, like a cashier at a grocery store or whatever, you know, you still can make a pretty good life for yourself.
Sure.
But on the, I don't know, in a lot of the East Coast cities, it seems like the quality of life for those people is a lot lower.
Really?
I think so. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's sounds like a culture shock here in our own country, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I've lived on the East Coast before, but
that explains a lot.
Yeah. What was that supposed to mean?
I don't know, Tom. You're the one who comes in here turning on all the lights and
yeah,
bringing in all the bright lights from home.
Whatever.
So, while you were in New York, did you go to the UN?
Yeah, absolutely, I did.
Oh.
Yep. The place where good ideas go to die. Yeah, it was amazing to see the place where all that nothing, you know, occurs. And, I don't know, it was pretty cool, I guess. Sat in the General Assembly, sat in Israel's spot.
You sat in Israel's spot?
Yep, yep.
Was there a reason why you chose Israel's spot?
Actually, I was assigned it.
Oh, you were assigned Israel?
Yeah.
So, did you...
randomly assigned it.
Did you... Were you able to make any policies while you're there, then?
While they weren't looking. Suddenly agree to peace with the Palestinians.
Tom, the speaker from Israel, says... Yes. Okay, yeah, peace for the Palestinians, and what else? So, okay, let's...
Yeah,
let's,
cool.
This should be fun. Tom?
Yeah.
You are now the man from Israel, and what do you choose to do with the power that I've just now invested in you?
Well, the ambassador to the UN for any nation doesn't actually make policy.
Tom? Hush. We're playing a game. What do you do now? I mean, seriously, you have the power to...
What? I don't understand.
You have the power to shape the world right now before your fingers. What's your first...
No, UN ambassadors don't have that power. Are you
familiar? I know.
Do you know what goes on in the UN, Scotty?
I'm saying off of the UN.
Okay.
I'm giving you the power to shape the world right now.
Okay.
You're not the Israel guy anymore. You've just got promoted to...
To God.
Not quite to his level.
Okay, demigod.
Not quite his level. You are...
Zeus.
As the Democrats would put it, you are George Bush. Ruler of the world.
Right.
Dictator of the world, excuse me.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But anyway, seriously, though, what kind of things would you change?
I'm not sure if I comprehend the question. Let's see, I guess I would erase poverty, get rid of disease, and stop climate change. Like, I don't really know. What are you looking for here, Scotty?
There's wars going on right now, right? Because of political... This political faction and this political faction want the same piece of land, let's say.
Okay.
Would you do something to eliminate a war from happening in that area? And if you would, how would you go about doing it? For instance...
Wave my hands and then... Those.
But yeah, you would have to, I mean, use some real techniques. For instance, okay, there's a war going on here. How can we stop it? Well, one way would be to drop about 5 or 6 nukes and just blast the whole area, kill everybody, and start over.
That's kind of a reoccurring theme in your problem-solving techniques, Scotty.
What are you saying? My only way of solving problems is to drop big nukes and start over?
I didn't say that was the only way. I was just saying that's a reoccurring theme.
You got to realize, I played Nintendo, right?
Okay.
And if I was losing, you hit the reset button and started over. So if in your life,
yeah,
GTA taught you to be violent, in my life it taught me to hit the reset button and start over. So so there you go. Video games actually do cause whatever the game is.
Yeah.
So therefore, I should be one of the best quarterbacks ever.
Probably, yeah. So what do you think about the UN, Scotty?
Excuse me. Well, I think that the UN has ideas that are hurtful to American values. And that's very broad and everything like that.
Yeah.
But
which values?
Well, some of the things that the UN has tried to do as far as the resolutions that they're putting through with land regulations that they want all countries to abide by... would actually erode some owner rights of America. I think the idea of a world court is, in my view, sort of a scary thought. Because we're formed under the Constitution of the United States of America, and we have our system, and then all of a sudden you have a higher authority over America, and it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I don't think America actually has chosen to participate in the world court.
Fair enough. I'm just saying this is the UN, right? You're talking UN, not America with the UN. I'm saying the UN itself, just the idea...
It's voluntary, though. Yeah, that's the...
But the point is that the idea that these kinds of institutions exist or are trying to exist is sort of a just, I guess...
That's what internationalism is all about, though.
But as you know, I like a lot of what Ron Paul has to say.
Okay.
You know,
right.
I don't like the idea that there's a authority or theoretical authority or a body of people that would be elevated above that of our federal government.
Right.
Because at that time, you don't have America's best interests always coming first. And as bad as it might be for me to say, I'm an American, and I think America's interests need to come first.
But you said earlier that the UN has a spot, has a place.
In history, okay. In the history books.
Right. Okay, so you think it should
be... Sort of like the League of Nations.
You think it should be shut down?
No, I don't think it should be shut down. I just think that we should just continue down the path of not forming the one world government that that's trying to get towards. The reason why I say it shouldn't be shut down, because without the UN, there would be... The UN gives us this illusion that we're playing the game. Playing... You know what I mean? We do follow...
It's necessary for appearances.
Exactly.
It's pretty expensive.
It is.
For just that... Maybe it's worth it, but I don't know. It's pretty...
Well, I would like to think, and maybe it's not true, but I would like to think that the UN... Having the UN... with America and all these other countries involved in it, it gives everybody sort of an outlet where they feel something will be done. They don't feel like their only next option is always going to be to invade, to fight, or whatever else. And that's why, once again, with this whole U.S. thing, and this is why I say it's good that we have this illusion over there, but it's great that we are still our own sovereign nation, is the fact that, you know what, we have an enemy right over there, and, you know, we've spent 10 or 15 years writing all these resolutions saying, now, if you do that again, I'm going to write you another letter, and this time I'm going to make it meaner sounding. Oh, geez, you did it again. Now I'm going to write this letter, it's going to be really mean sounding, and I'm not going to allow you to have X. You know what I mean? No, I think the better option was to go there and eradicate the problem, or work to eradicate the problem. Writing letters doesn't stop the problem.
Yeah.
A piece of paper, like a restraining order, does not stop somebody from doing something bad if they really want to. The only thing that's... If you have a restraining order against somebody here in America, let's say in Washington, you have a restraining order against somebody, what's stopping them from... breaking the restraining order? The threat of retaliation, the threat of consequences.
Sometimes, so I mean, there's real consequences sometimes. I mean,
meaner letter the second time.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, when North Korea invaded South Korea, you know, the UN took...
But you're talking a long time ago. I'm talking about more recently.
What about Kuwait?
And what happened after Kuwait?
Resolution after resolution
was ignored by Hussein. And what was done about it? Well, nothing until George W. Bush and America decided that it's time to take care of the problem. Now, whether that was our spot to do or not, that definitely could be argued. If you listen to George Bush and some of the evidence that's out there, Saddam definitely had the ability to do... biological, chemical, mass weapons of mass destruction, and something needed to be done.
Well,
because
I mean,
he's the kind of guy, kind of guy that would use them against other people and his own. So you have that aspect, and we are in a world where, okay, we need to take care of threats that are going to cause mass destruction in America, and these are the people who have those abilities. Now, so you have that aspect of it, and you're like, well, weren't you just saying a little bit ago this whole terrorism stuff and the checking of everybody's bank accounts as they're making transactions and the cars coming down the freeways with the radiation detectors? You're not a big fan of that kind of stuff. Isn't that the whole terrorism stop check stuff too? And I guess you could say in some ways it is, but I think there's a big difference between looking at Americans and checking us heavily versus going to the people who are known to be terrorists and dealing with them. That's what I'm saying. So anyway, I think the UN is... I think that there is a reason for having a UN. There was obviously a reason for wanting to have it back after World War I, League of Nations, which of course just didn't work out very well. And then after World War II, you got the UN. You have a body of people that come together from all the different nations representing their points of view, and you know, you try to work together and everything like that. But I like the fact that it's not a binding situation, that we must obey all the rules or the resolutions done out of the UN. Only thing that gives the UN power is the fact that people are more or less, like with a restraining order in a lot of ways, the only reason why those work is because the person who receives it more or less voluntarily follows it.
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess that's the thing, is that
It's the case with any law, almost.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty true. I mean, certain laws definitely have better teeth than others. That's why some of the laws, you know, you try to make... You've had, you know, the three strike laws. Well, you know, if somebody breaks a law, there's a possible consequence. And if they break the law, there's a possible consequence. Well, some people are like, well, some people just don't learn that lesson. Or to them, that consequence not severe enough. We got to make a more severe consequence in order for somebody to not continue to break the law. So, and that's, I think that's where the UN fails, is that they are so worried about being, you know, politically... It seems like, you know, the whole idea that war is definitely the very last option. You know, sort of, there's a lot of people in America that don't think the death penalty should be used because it's not a deterrent. And I'm like, well, it might not be a deterrent, but it's definitely a punishment.
You don't think war should be the last option?
Should war be the last option? Now, that could be such a hugely open question. I think there's times where... Theoretically, if you honestly made war the last option, you'd never have war, now would you? Because there's always an option before war.
Probably, yeah.
That's my point of view. You always have another option. They didn't obey you. Okay, write them a worse letter. Okay, they didn't obey you. Well, put this sanction on. They didn't obey you. Well, put that sanction on. I mean, you could continue doing that forever, theoretically. But at some point... If you truly want to stop the problem, you've got to stop the problem. Sometimes it takes force.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody invades your country, you could have peace and not do anything. I mean, that would be more or less peaceful. Just surrender as soon as they come in. Yeah. Or you could fight back. And if you fight back, you're going to a war will be happening. But then again, invading somebody else's country, I think, is pretty much almost a declaration of war, is it not?
Yeah, I think that would constitute an act of aggression. I think that would be...
I had a professor who tried to lock us into trying to say that the United States warships surrounding Red China was not an act of aggression. Nope, not... Because it was one of those ones where it was a poli-sci class, and we had to do a moot court. Actually, we're doing... I'm trying to remember what it was. It was a moot... It wasn't truly a moot court so much as it was we had like Dulles versus Bush, which George Herbert Walker Bush. And Dulles was a senator who was suing Bush over some of the things that Bush was doing, trying to get him to stop it, saying that Bush didn't have the power to do what he was doing because it was an act of war or, you know, could be considered an act of war, and he didn't have that kind of power to do what he was doing. And my group happened to have the side of Bush, and so we argued that side, and it was a group project. And actually, in all the years that I've done group projects from, you know, high school on, I've never had a group that was as good as this one. As far as you know, we met together, we actually got stuff done. We were very productive. They were a good group to work with. Everybody seemed to want to do well, and
right on.
It was really great. And then the other side, I mean, especially when we went up there, we pretty much tore them apart. They went up there and they did a horrible job. But then the professor would ask questions of each group. And we were one of the very last groups to go. And this went over several days. So we watched day after day after day after day, where the professor would then, he'd ask a question. And he was really good at crafting questions to paint you into a corner. And he would keep on painting them into a corner until they pretty much, they themselves were almost reversing their own position because the way he painted them into the corner. And we saw his way of doing this.
Right.
And one of the first questions for us was, well, wouldn't you say that the United States taking warships and surrounding Red China would be an act of aggression? And because that's not what Dulles and Bush was about, if I remember correctly. It was about something else, but it was, you know, he was working that direction.
Right.
Well, don't you think that taking United States battleships and surrounding Red China would be an act of aggression?
It's only if they're in territorial waters. But.
And my answer was no. And he just, I mean, it was like you could see the balloon just go deflate.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, immediately. And he... he was like lost for words. And because, I mean, he fully expected us to go, oh, yeah, that'd yeah. be, that'd be aggressive. But we're like, no. And he's just like, what? And then the bell rings because we were right at the end of class anyway. So he didn't get time to go on to it because I'm sure he would have had another one to, right. you know, nail us on. But he didn't get a chance to do it. And on my way out of the classroom, he looks at me and goes, not an act of aggression. And he just sort of smiled and shook his head. and, you know, so we won. But anyway, I know it's the 1 o'clock hour. You're going to have to
about that time.
You're going to have to leave.
Out. I just want to say one last quick thing. I don't know if you saw Bhutan today. Country of Bhutan is voting to become possibly the world's newest democracy.
Oh, really?
Did you see that?
I saw on your Facebook. I think you had wrote something about that.
Yep. So I just want to, you know, right before I leave here, I just want to say, you know. Wish him the best of luck on that.
Are you pretty excited about that?
Well, yeah. It's great. It'd be great.
That's neat.
One more country abandoning autocracy and joining the community of free nations. Can't be a bad thing. So anyway, Scotty, have a good day.
Tom, you have a good one too, and I hope that after today and all my discussions and all the things that I was bringing up here and showing you, you'll no longer think of me as the Noid. And you'll see that I am not a crazy guy, that I am speaking the truth. And right now, we have the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Reach us on the telephone 335-2207, on the web at www.kzuu.org, and on the show's website www.thepes.com, where you could download all the audio from all the shows dating back till 2001. Had a bad weekend. Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need their help, stop by their office in Ad Addicts Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, Friday, 9 to 1. KZUU DJs, Republic Service announcements like what you heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, Room 126B, or fill out the form online. Located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, call our office at 335-2208. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiakin Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, soups, and salads with catering available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports, 509-334-5423. All right, Tom's out of the building, and we'll be on to some more stuff here shortly. And stay tuned for the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. All righty, welcome back to KZUU, and on the telephone with us, we have the other voice of Tom Forbes. How are you doing today, Tom?
Good, how are you, Scott?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, it's funny, when you call, it works like a champ. When other people call, it seems to not work. I think you have a special voodoo about you.
Yeah, it's that karma, I would think.
Yes, and you have probably lots of good karma built up.
Or bad, depending on your viewpoint.
Well, you know my viewpoint, good karma. Excuse me. So, what's happened new this week in the world of Palusatics?
I guess the big thing is I'm going to put in a plug for the WSU College Republicans. They are going to be hosting Dinesh D'Souza tomorrow night in Q, room 203 at 7:30 p.m. I highly recommend everyone going by to check that out. Should be an evening of lively discussion. For those of you who don't know, Dinesh D'Souza is a former Reagan administration policy analyst. He's also with the Heritage organization, and is also a best-selling author, has written several best-selling books. And it's guaranteed to be controversial. I'm sure he'll be talking about the state of race politics in America as of today. And so, considering all the news that has been concerning presidential candidate Barack Obama and his pastor, Jeremiah Wright, I think that should be quite relevant to everything that's going on right now.
And when you say... when you say race politics, you're not talking about the presidential race. You're talking about, like, race as in skin color,
yeah,
right?
Black and white, yes.
Okay.
Black, white, you know, Asian, whatever the case is. I think D'Souza will probably touch on that, and I'm sure that there will be many in attendance who don't happen to agree with his viewpoint. Interesting note of trivia, though, about Dinesh D'Souza, which to me is infinitely more interesting probably than anything that... You know, the controversy doesn't interest me as much as the fact that here's a bit of trivia about Dinesh D'Souza. He, how familiar are you with kind of the conservative talk radio world? I mean, I would imagine you're relatively familiar with that, and
yeah, pretty familiar.
And kind of the hot chicks of conservatism, Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter. Okay, in fact, Ann Coulter's even been on the cover of Time magazine before, looking all sexy. And so, anyway. Dinesh D'Souza has actually dated both of them in the past. And in fact, he was actually engaged to Laura Ingraham at one time. They both went to the same school together.
Well, that is interesting.
And so there you go.
And he's actually old enough to be a Reagan policy analyst?
He was very young at the time. It was just out of college that he did that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because I'm looking at the photo they have of him on www.palusatix.com. And he looks pretty young right now.
He is. I think he's... He's probably my age, maybe a little bit younger. I'm not sure.
Oh, God, I didn't know he was that old.
Yeah, he's pretty ancient. Yes, theoretically, I too could have been a Reagan policy analyst, but didn't quite work out for me.
Oh, that's too bad.
I think he was an analyst maybe around 87, 88, so it's pretty late in the Reagan administration.
Great. So he'll be coming and speaking. Now, is he going to do a talk and then everybody will be able to have a conversation, or how is it going to work?
I'm not sure how that's going to work. I would imagine it's going to be, this is just me totally guessing, and
sure.
Danny Shantz or Alex Williams, if either of you guys are listening, why don't you call in right now, 335-2207, and you can you can illuminate us further on this, but... I'm guessing there may be some Q&A after his talk. So
sure.
That's just me guessing, though.
Okay. And then what's this? She thinks my tractor's sexy story about.
Yeah, it's this is it's amazing how they have to have studies to prove these things that are otherwise known as common sense, but. Okay, grab onto something here, Scotty. This is probably going to just totally blow you away.
All right.
But women, it turns out, are not as concerned about the appearance of their husbands as men are of their wives. That's a shocker, isn't it?
Wow, I'm holding on to something still. I can't believe it.
Men tend to like to have a wife that's prettier than them. I know that's hard to believe, but yes, it's true. Men... They've got a study now that says that the marriages that work best are the ones where the husband is uglier than the wife.
You know, and I think it shows in shows like The Flintstones and Family Guy and even The Simpsons. I mean, you know, the husband is always just a slob, and, you know, the wife, I guess, you know, in the cartoon world would be probably considered attractive.
Right.
So, yeah, so, I mean, even it even shows in the cartoons that's the way things were.
So yeah, I don't know why it took science, you know, thousands of years to finally, you know, actually get some proof to this. This is another blockbuster scientific study. I think a few weeks ago they had another one that said that men that helped out around, or husbands, I should say, that helped out around the house tended to have more sex than husbands that didn't.
Now, gee, I wonder why that is.
Again, this is something that common sense tells you. You don't need a scientific study that. To tell you these things.
That's interesting. I, You know, that would have been so good had that scientific study come out years ago. Our divorce rate would probably be a lot
exactly.
lower.
Exactly. Yes, if only husbands had known that by doing housework, their wives would be nicer to them. Shocking, but true.
Shocking, but true. All right. So I guess the latest that I've heard is that Walmart's pulling out of Pullman, and they're only going to build in the corridor, huh? That's horrible.
Yeah, that's the latest rumor.
It's only a rumor. Oh, geez.
Yeah, big story in the Moscow Pullman Daily News on Saturday to that effect. And you know, I'm still kind of scratching my head as to you know why they would run that story when Walmart, of course, you know denies that that is the case. So without any new information, I'm not quite sure why they would choose this particular time to run that story, unless you know it's. May have been a slow news day, and they had nothing else to go with than to to run a story on unsubstantiated rumors. But nevertheless, you know that story ran, and you know Walmart says, "Well, right now we have no plans to locate in the corridor. We neither confirm nor deny that we'll locate at the Hawkins development, and we're still proceeding with our plans to locate a store in Pullman." And as I pointed out on the blog, this is. A rumor that is only slightly younger than the Brontosaurus. It's been going around for about 2 years. I would say probably right after the Moscow City Council voted to deny the rezone to allow Walmart to build a supercenter on the east side of Moscow. The logical conclusion would have been that Walmart would start looking at the Hawkins development, which, of course, has been known publicly since late fall of 2005. So, it's just a rumor. It's just people have gotten together and, you know, thought that, well, that would be a logical location. In fact, I have maintained all along, you know, if they want to do some substantial reporting, you know, report on this, but all along I've maintained that Moscow's former, I should say, I should give the current city council all the credit, their former opposition to the Hawkins development was almost entirely based on the fact that they felt that Walmart was going to go in there, and of course they didn't want Walmart anywhere within a 500-mile radius of Moscow, so they were going to do everything they could to stop it. And to back this up, there is a flyer that was put out by the No Super Walmart group in September of 2006 called Closing the Gaps, where they said, well, we've run those damn scallywags from Arkansas out of Moscow, but they still might be able to exercise their constitutional rights and build in either Latah County or Whitman County, and by God, we've got to stop that too. And it's coincidence or not that around that time was when the appeals against the Hawkins development really picked up was during 2006.
And sure enough, they were worried that Walmart would go to Hawkins, so it's not about Hawkins, it's all about Walmart.
I think that's if you ask me, that's what it's ultimately all about. I think Moscow's former opposition to the Hawkins development has been almost exclusively driven by Walmart derangement syndrome, which many people in this area, unfortunately, sadly suffer from.
Some MDS going on.
Yes,
right?
WDS.
Okay. Oh,
WMDS, I guess.
WMDS, yeah. There we go. Wow. You know, and it's interesting, too, because, I mean, that's been the, you know, holdup from the Walmart in Pullman for a long time. And I was pointing out to the other Tom on the show earlier that, you know, I mean, the city of Pullman is looking at needing, you know, $50, $55 million for the high school, one way or the other. And the fact that there's no Walmart putting in, what was it, about $50,000 a year in just school?
For Walmart alone, it's $112,000.
Oh, Walmart was $112,000. Okay, mm-hmm. Wow. I thought it was less than that, but okay. So, yeah, I mean, so there's $112,000 a year that the Pullman School District's missing out on for the last 4 years, 3 years?
Right. Well, maybe roughly the last year, because probably the earliest the store could have opened would have been maybe summer of last year.
I thought the store was slated after it was first announced to be opened pretty much that following school year. And then
remember the city didn't approve Walmart's site plan and SEPA checklist until October of 2005. And then take 15 months after that, that would have been... Okay, correction. I'm sorry. Maybe spring of 2007 would have been realistically the earliest it could have opened if there had been no appeals from PARD. Remember, the city sat on Walmart's application for about a year before it approved it.
Oh, wow.
They actually went back to Walmart three different times to revise the site plan.
Huh. Interesting. And if it wasn't called Walmart, it'd probably be here right now, huh?
Probably. If it were called just about anything else, it probably would be here by now. But, of course, Walmart derangement syndrome kicks in, and as soon as people hear the word Walmart, they lose all of their mental faculties and start behaving like three-year-olds.
And actually, it'd be funny. I mean, if it was something like a Target, you probably would have had people out there doing groundbreaking for them.
I'm sure they would have.
Here, look, I've broken ground for you. Come on, move in quicker, quicker, quicker.
All that matters is the label that you get your cheap Chinese crap from.
Yes, because if it's the same stuff from store A or store B, as long as it's from store B, it's better than cheap Chinese crud. It's,
exactly. It's, or if it was a local store that was selling you cheap Chinese crap, that would also be admirable.
Yes, and actually I was thinking about asking one of the local restaurant owners if she had any plans of lowering everybody's wages at her business when Walmart came in.
Well, I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure that's what happens is Walmart gets together with all the local business people and, you know.
They conspire to lower all the wages.
With a gun to their head, of course.
Oh, yes. Even without a gun to their head, I'm sure it's all a conspiracy to lower the wages.
It's all controlled from Bentonville, Arkansas. I've been there. I've seen the sinister world headquarters, you know, where... You know, much like Plankton and SpongeBob, you know, where they send out the mind control broadcast to have everyone fall into lockstep with them. I've seen that up close, so I can testify to that.
So the latest on Hawkins is we are now just waiting on the Boise state group to approve the
I guess the latest is
about
the city council voted to send the application to approve the water sale to Hawkins to the Idaho Department of Water Resources for approval. That's basically the last step. There is a bit of uncertainty as to whether IDWR will approve this. There is a letter, or an email, I should say, from a former attorney general. I guess in Idaho, there's attorney generals that like work with various different departments of the state. And so there was an attorney general for the IDWR and had issued an opinion on water sales back in 2005. And the opinion seemed definitely unfavorable. This was an email conversation between Mark Solomon, who's a local water activist in Moscow, and this former attorney general. But now it's my understanding that there's a new director of the IDWR from back in 2005, and that he has a different attitude regarding water sales to out-of-state entities. So we'll see. I mean, this is definitely not a slam dunk, and it doesn't affect Hawkins, because Hawkins, of course, still has water rights that they secured from the state of Washington, which are theirs now to keep, because Moscow, of course, as part of the deal, agreed to drop their appeals of those water rights transfers. So that's, no matter what, whether Moscow can sell water or not to Hawkins is irrelevant, because Hawkins has now secured those three water rights. Now, whether those water rights are sufficient to meet Hawkins' needs, I'm not sure about that. So that might be another wrinkle. Hawkins dropped its appeal of the fourth water rights transfer that was denied by the Department of Ecology, but if the Moscow water sale doesn't go through, they may have to pick that back up. I'm not sure, but so it still kind of remains to be seen exactly how it's all going to shake out. But I would imagine that this summer, once the ground dries up, you might see some earth starting to get moved out on the Hawkins side. I mean, there's a lot of preliminary work that they can do, before they have to start worrying about water and everything. So,
and speaking of worrying about the water, James Toyota is I know they've actually broken ground. There's a sign that says "Future Home of James Toyota," and I just have to say that it makes me smile every time I drive by there, seeing that a Moscow-based business is moving to Washington. But there's been some concerns over why a business is being allowed to build on that side of the road, because supposedly the stream was protected, or is the commissioners are trying to protect the stream by not allowing any construction essentially on the south side of the highway.
Well, the stream wasn't the concern. The concern was the Bill Chipman Trail. For years, one of the excuses, I mean reasons, that has been put forth by the anti-growth forces in this area to stop development in quarters, like, my God, it'll infringe on the Chipman Trail, as if that, you know, somehow is now a, you know, a right in itself, you know, a bicycle-slash-walking path that we created is now some sort of inalienable right that's guaranteed in the Constitution. But nevertheless, one of the ways that the county commissioners were able to get around all of these objections and move forward with retail zoning in a corridor back in 2005 was to designate the northern half of the corridor, which is the by far larger part of the corridor, as retail, and designating the southern part of the corridor as essentially non-development zone in order to mollify the screaming environmentalists. In other words, so it would not infringe on the Chipman Trail. However, you know, I mean, anyone that drives through the corridor can tell you the land is not that great on that side of the corridor anyway. There's not a whole, you know, there's the creek that runs through the middle of it. You know, anybody that wants to build there is going to have incredible, you know, wetlands and other, you know, bureaucratic nightmares that they have to deal with. And there's not, and plus, you know, the land that's between the road and the corridor in some places is, you know, not more than 30 feet wide. So, you know, it wasn't really that much of a sacrifice to make that distinction. So, but I'm guessing in the case of James Toyota that they were able to, you know, make a special exemption in one of the areas where it's probably, you know, at its widest between the road and the trail and the creek.
Right, because it's at that corner where
yeah, it's kind of a little bend there,
and the trail is really far in compared to the roadway itself. So
you know, if I remember that area there where James Toyota's going in used to be all rock. That was one of those sections that they really like blew up and reduced
yeah.
down to where it was flat. I mean, I think where it is now, that wasn't flat before. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was. That's been that flat land there has artificially been created by the road construction.
It pretty much was, because there was almost a little I would guess almost a 10-foot-tall cliff, because if you recall they had those crosses up there for the people who
right
because
that was about the place that the Russell accident took place
right yeah. and there was definitely a hill there, and there was definitely you know, a lot of hillside of rocks and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there's definitely a lot of deconstruction of the area there to make that fit in like it did. So, you know, I guess one thing I'm sort of wondering about is if Toyota had that land, or if that land was already zoned in such a way that it could be developed. Because it's right across from, more or less, from Champion Electric. And, you know, there is other construction technically on the south side of the highway.
Right.
Further down closer to Moscow. And even closer to Pullman. So
right, there's the Bush Fuel Distributors, and there's that, I guess it's a steel plant, or used to be anyway, a steel plant there. And there, yeah, I think there's like a fertilizer place there too.
Yep, so. There's that. And then when you get to closer to the Pullman side, you have the, you know, what is it, the Wheatland?
Right,
has
Wheatland
their
Express.
Stuff,
and yeah, and there's like, there's a quarry over there too,
quarry,
I guess.
Yeah.
And
by Sunshine Road, I think Motley and Motley is there, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, so you got a lot of things that are built along there. So
sure.
It's not like it was a, you know, construction free zone. Maybe there are certain areas where
that were grandfathered in. I'm not sure. I you know, all I remember, you know, of course, about the James Toyota deal was just, you know, what was in the papers, and they never really talked about. I don't remember any special zoning issues being involved with James Toyota. I just remember. You know, I remember the SEPA checklist issues, and there was the threat of Moscow possibly. Or I can't remember. Did Moscow appeal?
It seemed to me Moscow was trying to do something first, and I remember
threatening to appeal, but I think ultimately they didn't appeal the SEPA checklist for James Toyota.
Yeah,
there was a very strongly worded letter from the Moscow Chamber of Commerce directed to Mayor Cheney that, you know, that this was the wrong thing to do to try to oppose this.
Yeah, because it's like all of a sudden, well, yeah, now James Toyota is still there, but they're not very happy with your city at all.
Right.
And maybe they'll just outright move to Pullman.
Right.
And then you'll totally get them out of the area.
Right.
That's pretty much the only Toyota dealership in the Pullman-Moscow region. Region, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, I'm actually looking forward, you know, to them expanding. You know, we're going to be in the market for a new car probably in the next year or so, and given the size of the old the Forbes gang here, you know, it probably will have to be another minivan. And you know, the Toyota Sienna is kind of the hands down winner right now. It's one of the best minivans, and so.
Huh.
It'd be very nice to have a expanded Toyota dealership closer to home. As it is now, we have a Mazda, and the closest Mazda dealership is in Spokane. And so, trust me, maintenance can be
a nightmare, I bet. So, yeah, actually, before you go off and buy your next vehicle, you should listen to hour number two of last week's The PES, where we talked at length about the game.
Yes, yeah, I think you told me that, and so, yeah, I'll have to maybe go back. Yes, like I said, we're probably about a year away from making that transaction.
And definitely the game will not change by then.
Yeah, hopefully James will. I'm pretty sure and by next year they probably should have that new location open.
So. I would think so, because, I mean, for a dealership, it's pretty much a piece of cement on the ground and a little building, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's... Yeah, I mean, obviously the shop, you know, maybe a little bit more, you know, they have to put in
true.
The lift and the oil pits and things like that. But, I mean, overall, I think a year is probably plenty of time for them to finish up. And, yeah, I think one of the problems that James has had all these years is they just didn't have the real estate to display all the cars that they you know,
right.
have in stock. And so that's going to be a big, you know, bonus for them and for us is they'll be able to have a lot more stock on the premises.
Sure. Now, sort of switching gears, I was reading the Pullman Musker Daily News, and there's a letter to the editor that appeared today from a guy who has the same name as you.
Yes.
Do you happen to know this other gentleman?
I do, yes. And he's quite angry with the Moscow Pullman Daily News.
Okay, why is he angry?
Well, because the Daily News has, in my opinion, having a comment section on a newspaper website is, you know, debatable. But having it where it is anonymous and then even worse, unmoderated, is pretty inexcusable. You know, I realize what the Daily News is trying to do. They're trying to jump into the new media world. They're trying to be more like blogs. They're trying to be more like message boards. And there are blogs here, including my own, that are in this area. There's another popular Moscow blog called Right Mind. There's a message board in Moscow called Vision 2020. So I'm sure the Daily News is trying to, you know, keep up with the times and be more relevant and perhaps competitive with, you know, some of those other, you know, community outlets. But what they've lost sight of is a newspaper is not a blog and it's not a message board. A newspaper, you know, has a unique responsibility, in my opinion, to the community that they serve. You know, they're not just, you know, some blog that like some guy decides to put up on the internet. I mean, this is our community newspaper. They're the only source of news locally for this community, for better or for worse. And so I think they have to, you know, legally they have a different standard to uphold, and certainly morally I think they have a different standard to uphold. And so, you know, I find it very disappointing that when patently false and potentially libelous comments are made on their website that they refuse to take any responsibility to do anything about it. Like in this particular case, there was a town crier column last Wednesday by Bruce Livingston of the Moscow Civic Association where he detailed what had been discussed at a forum that his group had held on the Hawkins development in Moscow a couple of weeks ago. And amazingly, my name was not mentioned at all. You know, this was written by a guy who lives in Moscow about people's reactions in Moscow, you know, to the Hawkins development, which is in Whitman County. Now, ordinarily, I would say that it's none of their business. However, the city of Moscow has decided to sell water to Hawkins, so now it has become, you know, the people of Moscow's business. But yet, it did not involve me, or Bruce Livingston did not mention me in his column whatsoever. And then people began to comment, you know, about the substance of the article, which was fine in and of itself. A bit of it got kind of tangential, but, you know, it was kind of some discussions about Hawkins and the growth and development in the region in general and water and whatnot, and which, again, is fine. And, again, my name was not involved. I don't post at the Moscow Pullman Daily News website. I'm a blogger. Why do I need to go to a newspaper? You know, if I have something I want to say, I'll blog about it on my own blog. I don't need to go you know, to the Moscow Pullman Daily News website to do it. And if I did, I certainly wouldn't do it as someone else or using a pseudonym because I'm well-known in this community and I'm well-known for taking very controversial stances on the issue, so it makes no sense at all why I'd want to, you know, take a stance on a controversial issue and, you know, and deny that it was me. So anyway, so there is a regular poster on the Daily News website that's known as T.J. Kong. And so this person was engaging and made some comments. And then Chris Lukey, of PARD, as always, tends to butt into these conversations and has his own distinct point of view. But, you know, Lukey was under the impression, and has been, I think, for a long time, that T.J. Kong is me, because it kind of fits in with the whole Walmart derangement syndrome that I've talked about, where, you know, in his mind, I'm the only person in town that supports Walmart, and if anybody says anything that's even vaguely pro-Walmart or pro-development, it somehow has to be, you know, Tom Forbes, and I'm responsible for all of this somehow. And so anyway, he began making a lot of derogatory comments towards T.J. Kong, referring to T.J. Kong as Tom, and making comments that, you know, he's made in the past about me, and rants about me, and ridiculous things like a pro-Walmart petition, which is, there's never been a pro-Walmart petition, to my knowledge, that anyone has ever circulated in this area. There was a survey, a mail card survey that Walmart sent out when they first decided to move into the area, and they got about 9,000, they sent it out to about 9,000 people, and about two-thirds of those responded favorably, but there's never been a petition. So anyway, I guess at one point the commenter known as T.J. Kong made a comment to the effect of, like, why don't you two get a room, referring to Lukey and then another guy who posts on there. You know, they tend to be a lot of self-congratulatory, patting each other on the back and G.I. agree with you type posts. And so the poster called T.J. Kong said, why don't you two get a room? And next thing you know, Lukey fires back, and again, assuming that it's me, and says blah, 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 makes all these statements. And now suddenly I'm making homophobic jokes and something else about, you know, I'd mentioned nooses the week before, and it's disgusting. And even earlier in the thread, regarding other comments that T.J. Kong had made, like Lukey was referring to that I had a prurient fascination with Nazis, and, you know, all these blatantly false comments. You know, and as I said in the paper today, you know, Lukey certainly has a right, he has a constitutional right to have an opinion about my opinions, because I certainly have an opinion that I'm, you know, always eager to express about his opinions. But that's his opinions. I do not attribute controversial comments that others have made, you know, to him. He does not have a right to mistake my identity and then accuse me of, you know, like I said, potentially libelous comments, like calling me homophobic or, you know, in love with Nazis. And so anyway, I brought this to the Daily News attention, and they refused to do anything about it.
Okay.
And so that's my complaint, is if you're going to have a forum like this and someone goes, you know, the Daily News knows it's not me. They know who all the posters are, and so they know clearly that, you know, it is not me that is being referred to. So I do have a legitimate case. You know, this is not a case of me playing both sides against the middle. And so I'm just very frustrated that they decided not to to act upon my complaint. If you're going to have a board like this, it's bad enough, but if you're not going to take actions to eliminate things that are clearly inappropriate, clearly wrong and over the top, then you just got to get rid of the commenting altogether, in my opinion.
Well, that's interesting. And then, you know, I guess my point of view is I think the comments are, especially when it comes to the opinion section, being able to, you know, sort of quickly comment back on what somebody else has said, sort of gives you a chance to call people on inaccurate comments or inaccurate letters or inaccurate reasoning or whatever. So it's a nice quick feedback versus the old way, which essentially was, oh, now I have to sit down and write a letter. The Daily News has to choose to publish it, and it has to, you know, find spot in there, and, you know, somebody's going to have to read both to understand the whole situation. And, you know, I mean, in today's age where you have the rapid, you know, everybody wants everything now society, I think it works out really well. Now, as far as the, I guess as far as the anonymous portion of it, realistically, in order to even get to that point, you have to have an account. So nobody is truly anonymous to the Daily News, as you pointed out. They're only anonymous to other posters, more or less, unless they've chosen to use a name that's recognized by other people, whether it's a real name or not. That's yet to be determined by any of these people. But it's interesting when you've actually made a case for saying this is not a blog and this is not like a normal forum. This is a newspaper.
It is.
And, you know, because I've always looked at it as like a forum where everybody has their own personality online,
yep.
and everybody has their own handle online.
And if it were a forum like a public meeting, I would have, in the basic sense of what you are saying, I would agree with you. But it would be like a town hall meeting where if you stood up to speak, then everyone would know, oh, that's Scotty that's standing up to speak. You know, you would own your words. If you were speaking at a town hall meeting, you would own your words. And so that's what all I'm asking for is if we're going to have a forum like this, either don't make it anonymous where, you know, people have to post under their real names. The Daily News knows who these people are. They have to pay to have an online subscription. They use a credit card to pay. They have an account number. When they post, their account number is visible to the Daily News, so the Daily News knows exactly who it is that's posting. So I don't know what would be the problem with just taking the name that's associated with that account and publishing it with it. Because like you said, it's like an instantaneous letter to the editor. Well, you can't send a letter to the editor using an anonymous handle. You got to give them your name, your address, and your daytime phone number. And so I don't know why people that comment online are held to a different standard. I have no problem with having an online forum as long as people are responsible for the words that they say. Because as I mentioned in the article, you know, there's a fairly well-known sociologist, you know, that studied online behavior and said that the quality of online forums is inversely proportional to the amount of anonymity that exists there.
Huh.
Inevitably, the more anonymous a forum is, the more the forum will devolve into name-calling, spam, flaming, and all sorts of other inappropriate behavior and ruin the quantity of discussions. And I would say that's a problem with the Daily News. Yeah, there are some good comments that are made from time to time, but most of it, and from what I can see, is name-calling, vendettas, people that have agendas against other people, and there really doesn't seem to be any kind of substantial, you know, community dialogue that's going on that, you know, that I can see. And you take two communities that are as divided as Pullman and Moscow on a variety of issues, it just gives, you know, too many people a forum to step on there anonymously and stick a knife in the back of whoever it is that they don't like. And okay, fine. So you're gonna have anonymity. If you're gonna have anonymity on a newspaper website, then what I would insist on is that the comments cannot be unmoderated, that the comments, you know, have to be, if there's something that clearly that crosses a line, someone at the Daily News website has to either make a judgment call not to post that comment, or if someone then later objects to it, then they would review it and then delete that comment if they feel like that it crosses a line. You know, there has to be some sort of control. It can't just be this complete Wild West free-for-all. Like I said, in this case where Lukey is allowed to make a completely unsubstantiated comment that is damaging to my reputation. And so now what is the only choice I have? Well, the only choice I have is to grab a lawyer and go haul him into court. And so all the onus is on me. You know, he is the one that has made these comments about me, you know, imply that I'm homophobic and a Nazi and all these other things, and now suddenly all of the onus is on me. When it is the Daily News that provided him the method for doing this to a large audience. And so I think it's completely inappropriate.
All right. Okay, and now I was thinking about this today. This isn't you talked about Moscow and how divided Pullman and Moscow have been, you know, lately, especially because, you know, we seem to be on two different sides of a lot of issues. And it might be sort of unfair to say, because in some ways we're not necessarily divided from Moscow. We're divided from a vocal majority of Moscow, maybe be a better way of saying it, since the, you know, for a while there it was the city council, which, you know, typically
right.
The city council is voted by the people, so therefore it's a representative of the people. But, you know, now we have a different city council, so you could almost argue, well, I think the people of Moscow are not the ones who are against us. I think there's a certain vocal minority.
I mean, I think there's a vocal minority in both towns.
Sure.
Along political lines, I mean, many different issues where there's probably no agreement. I mean, I won't even get into the issue of, you know, how, you know, there are people that oppose Christchurch in Moscow. I mean, that's a whole separate issue. But, you know, it just happens that a lot of the same people, you know, are also against, you know, growth and development. But, I mean, obviously, Moscow and Pullman both are towns that are at a crossroads with regards to, you know, to growth and development. And so it's probably inevitable. It probably happens in every town that, you know, there's always these, you know, elements where, you know, there's people that are resistant to change for whatever reason. I think it's just probably exacerbated in Moscow and Pullman because, A, we're so close to each other, and, B, you know, there are major universities in both towns. And so I think that probably, you know, the university presence is, you know, A, you're going to have people that are you know, tend to be a little bit more left of center than you would in a regular small town, and then also the people that are going to be against growth and development are going to be a lot more educated and literate and therefore much more vocal in their opposition. They know what to do. They know how to work the system. They write letters. They write columns. They become columnists for the newspaper, that kind of thing.
Well, what's interesting is I was listening to the news this morning, and they're talking about all the people who have filed to run for different county offices. And I was really shocked. Maybe this shows how out of touch of Moscow I really am, or Latah County. But I was really shocked with how many Democrats are elected officials over in Latah County.
Sure.
I was really surprised. I mean, it's like, yeah, this person's running as a Republican against the incumbent Democrat this and the incumbent Democrat that. I'm like, wow.
Well, you know, and I kind of blogged about this probably maybe a week and a half ago, and it was in response to, you know, what I thought was a laughably simplistic kind of evaluation that there was this University of Idaho, like they'd done like a resource site for the Palouse Basin water, you know, resources, and one of the things they did was like the socio-political, you know, culture of the Palouse, and it was broke down in very simplistic and frankly offensive terms. You know, the guy had not obviously done any research about it, just played into all the kind of stereotypes that, well, Whitman County is Republican and pro-growth and Latah County is Democratic and anti-growth and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's totally, you know, those seem like the stereotypes, but it's totally, you know, not true, because there are Democrats that are in favor of growth and development and are in favor of Walmart. They don't tend to get as much coverage, and they're not as vocal as the Democrats, say, who are against it. But, you know, that is a gross oversimplification. And again, I pointed out Latah County, yeah, which has traditionally been much more Democratic. You know, like you were talking about, you know, terms of local officials, you know, county commissioners and sheriffs and things like that, you know, versus Whitman County, which has been strongly Republican, local official-wise, you know, for many, 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 many years. And yet, Latah County is the one that, for the most part, in Moscow, that has been much more developed than Pullman and Whitman County. You know, so you can't start, you know, breaking the growth and development issue along political lines, because it really doesn't fall into neat little political categories like that. But like I said, those are real stereotypes. You have to dig a little bit deeper to look at what people's, you know, motivations are for either being for growth or against growth. And it really doesn't, you know, like one of the things they broke it down was like who the counties had voted for in the 2004 presidential election. It's like, that's silly. You know, to judge whether someone is in favor of growth and development by whether they voted for Kerry or whether they voted for Bush in 2004 is very, very silly.
So then the lost my train of thought. Sorry about that, Tom. But we were talking about the political parts of Moscow, at least. And like I said, that really was shocking to me. Just the fact that you had so many Democrats over there. Because, you know, most, as the stereotype, small towns are very, you know, tend to be more conservative, more Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But now, one thing I had heard is...
Except for small university towns.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, when you look...
So Pullman is largely...
It is.
The breakdown I've seen is about 55% to 45% Democratic, Pullman is.
Pretty much. I mean, if
in the way people vote in Pullman.
Exactly. If you go to the...
Like the presidential elections.
Right. If you look at the actual numbers that come in by the precincts, you'll find that Pullman, you know, even though Pullman has, you know, just about... just over 50% of the population of Whitman County... So theoretically, having over 50% of the population, you could theoretically run the county if you really wanted to.
Right. The difference is Pullman does not constitute as much of a majority of Whitman County's population as Moscow does of Latah County's population.
Sure.
I think that's the difference.
Okay. And so what you have this situation, though, is that really, if Pullman wanted to, they could run Whitman County, but they don't, because so many of the people who either don't vote or they vote... you know, in the Reverend Martin Luther King County or whatever county, you know, as a student where they came from, because there's, you know, of the 25,000 Pullman residents, you know, approximately 17,000 to 18,000 of them are students. Now, what was brought up the other day, though, is that 17,000 to 18,000 figure, it doesn't sound like that's ever really going to change too much.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like, although, you know, there was a story in the paper, I think a couple days ago, about WSU's looking at its probably largest freshman class ever.
Yeah, okay.
And so the enrollment's going to go up, but, you know, but then again, they pointed out, yeah, that's only because of certain demographic factors, and probably in a few years it would be, you know, it's because of how many people were born in certain years.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, that's a very random and variable, you know, thing. And so, yeah, but you're right. I don't think, you know, we're ever going to see probably another 10,000 in enrollment at WSU. I think that's probably...
Which is really, in a lot of ways, too bad, because I think that, I mean, I guess you could look at it in one of two ways. One, you could say, well, by not, I mean, if Pullman grows in population and it's not student population, you might get a stronger overall city, a more stable city that's not dependent on one economic class, such as right now we're so dependent on students and their spending and their being here and everything. It would be nice to have WSU be rivaled by, say, Schweitzer, and maybe even rivaled by another large corporation or two or three or four that bring in people. So even if one goes on a slight downswing for a while, which always happens with every industry,
yeah, like I said,
the other ones keep the town up.
Yeah, the way population is, it's inevitable that colleges will have ups and downs, because that's just, you know, there's only a finite supply of 18-year-olds in any given year. So
sure. So, but, you know, and obviously what I was talking about, too, is what we were talking about at lunch a little bit about the overall plans for the growth of the WSU college system.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I'm like you. Obviously, I don't want to see anything taken away from, you know, WSU Pullman, because we are, you know, are so dependent on the university economically. But I guess you have to, you know, always remember what the S in WSU stands for, which is state. You know, we do serve the state of Washington, and so I think that's the mission. You know, they are looking out primarily for the state of Washington versus, you know, the city of Pullman, and so we're, you know, we're likely to see, you know, that that branch campus system grow even more in prominence than it is now, which, you know, will, as we discussed at lunch the other day, probably have kind of a dampening effect on WSU Pullman enrollment. You know, either making it decline slightly, but certainly probably stay flat, at least for the foreseeable, you know, for the foreseeable future. And, you know, and like I said, that's reality. That's political reality. You know, when you look at, I've looked at this before. Vancouver has five legislative districts that encompass Clark County, that have pieces of Clark County, which is where Vancouver is. That means five state senators and 10 state representatives that represent Vancouver. We have two state representatives and one state senator for all of, not just Pullman, but Eastern Washington University as well. So, and then you look at Tri-Cities, I think they encompass two legislative districts, and then of course when you look at WSU Spokane, I believe, makes up parts of six different legislative districts. So we're, you know, you look at the votes, we're outvoted. I mean, that's, you know, that's a sad reality, or not sad, but I mean, that's political reality, is that universities are funded by the state legislature, and the state legislature votes upon funding, and people from those other areas like Vancouver and Spokane and Tri-Cities are going to vote for things that are in their district versus things that are in our district.
Right.
And we're going to get outvoted every time, you know. And so I see much more of that rather than much less of it in the future. I mean, we'll get our share. You know, we got our plant sciences building, which was, you know, and that was good. And, you know, there's several other little things that, you know, that are going to get thrown our way. And but a lot of the money that may have been spent on things here on the WSU campus are going to be used to, you know, to build things at WSU Vancouver and WSU Tri-Cities.
And my biggest concern, and we joked about this before on the show, but I really am afraid it could become a reality, WSU football out of Vancouver.
Yeah, you know, it's...
people say it won't happen because
you've
got to keep it in Pullman.
You can't say it won't happen because...
But you have a population base over there that could demand it. Okay, how about one time a season WSU plays at Vancouver?
Yeah, no,
just like we do in Seattle.
Oh, absolutely, you cannot. You can't say it won't ever happen. You can't say it's ridiculous because... you know, probably, well, I mean, I wasn't here. I do not say this as a native. I just know this because I read it in books. But, you know, the Apple Cup, people forget, up until the 80s, was played in Spokane. You know, when it was time for the WSU to host the Apple Cup, it was played up at the field in Spokane. It wasn't played in Pullman for many, 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 many years because Pullman was just too rinky-dink. There just, you know, there just wasn't, the stadium wasn't big enough and there weren't enough hotels or whatever. People didn't feel like, you know, driving over here. And so it's not beyond the realm of possibility that, like you said, one football game, two football games even could be held over in the Vancouver area because you have, it's a rapidly growing area. It's the fastest growing area in the state of Washington. And it's in the Portland metropolitan area, and you know you got to look at, like, they already have the one game that's over at Quest Field because they know that there's going to be going to sell a lot of tickets. So why not have one over there
right.
in the Vancouver area?
Exactly, or maybe even replace the Quest game with Vancouver.
Sure.
1 year. Well, just for 1 year, and then pretty soon,
yeah.
you know, 4 or 5 years later, well, we're going to play two games
yeah,
over here.
Yeah, because the Seattle game looks like it's become pretty much of a fixture, and they
yeah.
I think they've asked Sterk about that, and I mean that doesn't seem like anything that you know is going to be going away anytime soon.
Right, and you know I wasn't necessarily against that because it's sort of cool to. You know, especially for all the Cougs that are over there that don't get to come over here for various reasons, whether it's money, whether it's having a family with kids and not being able to have a place to stay or on and on and on. You know, now they can go watch the Cougar game and everything like that once
right.
over there. But my concern is, of course, that all of a sudden it becomes WSU Vancouver has enough clout that says, no, you know what? We deserve the football team. You guys can keep the baseball team. And then Tri-Cities is like, you know, we deserve the basketball. No, Spokane would say that because we're like, well, we got Gonzaga in our backyard, and we have to have something to counteract Gonzaga.
Right, well, and there have been basketball games up in Spokane here recently, too.
Yep.
I mean, not just Gonzaga, but they've had, like, home WSU games up in Spokane.
Right. So my concern is that if that ever were to happen, I think, honestly, that could spell the end of WSU Pullman, but... I'm not hoping for that to be the case.
Well, I think that you know, I think that's probably you know pretty far away. I mean, obviously, there's you know,
out of my lifetime at least
billions of dollars of infrastructure that exists here now, and it's hard to see you know that being. I mean, they you know the state is obviously you know for the last you know what is it 1890, so it's almost 100. We'll be having the 110th anniversary? No, 120th anniversary. Sorry, of WSU coming up in a couple of years. So the over that 120 years, the state has invested a lot of money in WSU, and so I think there will always be a WSU Pullman. It's just you know, it won't be much bigger probably than it is now.
Yeah. Well, Tom, we've hit our magical 1400 hours,
yes.
2 o'clock in the PM hour. I appreciate you calling as
yep.
always. It was good to talk.
We'll talk to you soon, Scotty.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Once again, this is the PS on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. And coming up next, we have, what do we have here?
We've got DJ Kirk, and without DJ Nick this week, sadly.
So DJ Kirk without DJ Nick, and we got what songs coming up here?
We got Dang Gay Fever with the song Ocean of Venus.
Dang Gay Fever. Ocean of Venus. Go ahead and play it. We'll have a good one.